Enterprise Management 360, your main source for tech news, analysis, podcasts, and videos for the enterprise.
All right, welcome to the EM360 podcast, where we have a weekly conversation with people who are impacting the enterprise technology landscape. My name is Kevin Petrie. I'm VP of Research here at Eckerson Group, a boutique research and consulting firm focused exclusively on data analytics. I write about the intersection of data management, advanced analytics, and cloud modernization. Today, I'm joined by Ian Smith, field CTO at Chronosphere. And we're here to discuss a topic that falls right in the crosshairs of these trends. Our topic is observability and how developer inefficiency is costing your business. Ian, welcome.
Thank you. Great to be here, Kevin.
Ian, tell us a little bit about your charter and at Chronosphere and a little bit about your background.
Sure. I've spent the last 10 years in the vendor side of the monitoring and observability space, working with a broad range of customers, you know, unicorns, large public companies, Fortune 100 enterprises. And my role here at Chronosphere is really trying to make sure that organizations are getting value out of observability. Obviously, Chronosphere is a vendor in the space, but also tracking where the market's going and being that voice of the field into engineering, product, and marketing as well.
Excellent. Okay, so I want to start with definitions. I wrote a blog, a year and a half ago now, The Five Shades of Observability. I don't think we're up to 50 yet, but there's certainly a number of shades of observability. There's data observability, data quality, data pipelines. Then there's observability in the context of cloud-native environments focusing on cloud-native applications. That's our focus here, and maybe we could start by having you define this discipline of observability and what the key trends are that are shaping that landscape.
Yeah, of course. And you know, really, it's an evolution. It's not necessary that observability is drastically different and only applies to cloud-native or something that sprang out in the last couple of years. Yesterday's monitoring is really today's observability. Organizations, particularly those who live or die by their customer experiences as served over the internet and applications, they need to understand, am I open for business? Are my customers having a good experience? What do I need to do to fix any problems that I might be experiencing? Modern observability, particularly in cloud native, it's about doing that in much more complex environments with different architectures and a broad range of technologies, bigger scale, but then also with the whole move to DevOps in mind. You have developers focused on operating these services now, not dedicated operations staff. And there are obviously a lot of different challenges involved here. The audience internally is much broader, more varied, and also more sophisticated in a way, but also the types of data, the types of problems you're dealing with are very different to when we were running monolithic applications in our own data center. And definitely on the trend side, I'll talk about three that I see across the industry and maybe a fourth that's interesting about how we progress these things and really drive better outcomes. So the first, from a key trends perspective, is I see organizations being quite cost conscious, obviously related to the economic environment that we were in, particularly last year, but trying to understand the value they're getting from their observability investments. The hard and soft costs of observability have really been out of control over the last few years. Everyone's heard or has direct firsthand experience about explosions of data, overages from their observability vendors, or even if they're building their observability stacks internally, requiring very excessive maintenance and a huge investment in engineering time and effort. Reducing those data volumes, reducing the management overhead, these topics really headline 9 out of 10 conversations that I've had in the last 6 to 12 months in particular. But that's not all. You can't get away with just solving the cost issues and those kinds of things. There's a second trend, I would say, which is a move to comprehensively owning your data. This can manifest in a number of different ways. It might be moving to OpenTelemetry from proprietary agents, or maybe even implementing a telemetry pipeline that allows you to route your telemetry around to different destinations based on the right fit. Say, for example, you may put compliance logging data into cold S3 storage because you don't really need the performance, you need the lower costs involved, and you don't really want it to leave your environment from a compliance perspective. The third trend is there's a really big focus on developer efficiency and effectiveness when it comes to delivering on observability outcomes. So how much time does it take for a developer to solve a problem? Junior developers take on more of the on-call burdens that I'm experiencing. And am I involving a whole bunch of engineers unnecessarily during investigations around key incidents? this has always been an undercurrent of concern, but the scrutiny and awareness from engineering leaders about these topics is really a pressing concern, and it obviously feeds into what we're talking about today in terms of developer efficiency. So from a tooling perspective, lots of companies are looking to move towards platforms and away from point solutions or homegrown tools. The last point that I was going to make is, so the last three have really been about outcomes, but the fourth trend that I'll talk about is, and particularly interestingly for me, the organizations that are ahead of the curve in terms of delivering these outcomes around cost or developer efficiency, there's a really common theme that I'm seeing. They're elevating themselves, their thinking and what they're doing past just throwing tools at the problem. And they're really looking to build broad observability strategies that really connect your engineering priorities and business initiatives down into what the individual engineers might be doing, the types of telemetry that you've got, and so on. And just to sort of quickly define that for maybe people, the observability strategy will encompass people and process along with the observability tools and products you might have. And it plots a very company-specific course to these desired outcomes. Even if the outcomes might be common, they're going to be really tailored based off what kind of people do I have, what processes work in my environment, and what access to tools do I have.
So that's a great, really appreciate the view here in terms of forces that are shaping the landscape. And it's interesting if you take the macro perspective, because so many companies, especially amidst the wave of enthusiasm about Gen AI, AI ML, are building their competitive advantage into cloud native software. So this is more and more important to the success and the strategies of companies as they digitally transform and as they try to take more and more advantage of their digital interactions with customers and stakeholders. So it's good stuff. So let's zoom out a bit and talk about the job of today's cloud native software developer. In your view, what do these developers need to succeed and what stands in the way of their success?
Yeah, and I mean, you alluded to it just before, which is, you know, developers and the productivity, the capabilities they bring to innovate and compete in the market, that's really success for many of these organizations. Being able to say, you know, have a headcount, have them productive, have them able to contribute to that pace of innovation, that ability to outcompete, that's really key. So you can summarize it as developers need to contribute to exceeding the customer expectations. And as I said before, they're not just building things, but they're also having to operate those complex services, those new complex architectures. I talk to engineering leaders all the time who think about these kinds of questions. And for them, it's, you know, how do we invest across the right tools? And tools aren't just observability, to be clear. You know, you have to include categories like CI/CD, even IDEs, but yes, observability tooling, particularly because now these developers are operating these services and maintaining them as well. And you know, people and process is really critical. You can't just buy things. You can't just have your reams of code applying to these problems. Quality of life and burnout, I think, is really, from an engineering leadership perspective, if you're not thinking about that, that's going to stand in the way of you as an engineering leader being able to serve those developers and get them to that point where they are succeeding. So as an example, many of the developers I talk to see being on call as one of the worst parts of their job. And you know, there's obviously the sort of anecdotal emotional piece of that. But when you think about it a little deeper, there's a really big impact on productivity and enthusiasm above anything else that you can really have. It's not just the simple fact of being on call. People expect to have on-call responsibilities. This is shift to cloud native and DevOps. But it's how that experience pans out, and particularly if it's getting worse over time. Developers are often bombarded with alerts that aren't actionable, or they're brought in to investigate issues that don't relate to their domain of expertise, or they don't have the tools that allow them to solve these problems. They don't have the data they need because maybe the cost of observability is too high. And I talk to organizations all the time where they say, well, you know, we would have invested in having customer-specific telemetry, but the cost of that was too much, which then meant that we couldn't solve problems specific to a given customer. And we had to wait for a customer to complain themselves before we figured out there was an issue. So, I mean, even if you pull back from the observability piece, if you're not properly taught how to test and compile your code, it's pretty obvious you're not going to be able to ship new product effectively. In the same way, if you aren't properly equipped to handle the observability outcomes and the things that you're trying to do in terms of operating these services, small performance blips can be suddenly exacerbated into major outages that are going to really destroy productivity, both in the moment, and they have this very long tail effect. And ultimately, in a worst case scenario, when we've definitely seen, you know, quiet quitting and those kinds of things as a manifestation of it, but developers will leave organizations that burn them out, and continually being in a firefighting mode with poor tools and processes is going to be a leading cause of that burnout.
It is interesting, and we see this working with practitioners all the time, that it's easier to control electrons and software code than it is to control people.
Yes.
And so the people side of the equation, this is just sort of an eternal truth of tech and life, where you really need to give thought to motivating and care and feeding of talented and smart individuals. So agree with those points completely. So let's unpack a little bit more how the developer inefficiency, you've talked about a number of the symptoms here. How does that bubble up to business impact? You talked about retention issues. You talked about cost. So we've got pain here. Maybe elaborate on the pain. And then on the tool side, if you can set up an efficient observability program that has people, process, and tools, how can you start to get well and mitigate some of these issues?
Yeah, of course. And, you know, maybe just some table stakes things that I think everyone in the audience probably knows, but worth reiterating, developers are often the leading cost for an engineering organization. You know, we hear about cloud cost management, AWS bills, GCP bills, and that kind of thing, but the people are oftentimes significantly more expensive. And, you know, frankly, it's a lot harder to go and acquire an additional experienced developer than it is to go spin up some more instances in AWS. So these are people, as we've just talked about. You don't want to burn them out. You can't overload them with too much responsibility or too much cognitive burden. And individual humans, they really can't scale themselves out or up. And so even talking with engineering leaders, when they think about developer inefficiency and observability, they're not necessarily linking them together. They might think about the number of incidents they have, and they might think about things like mean time to resolution as the key measures of on-call impact. But there's obviously a huge opportunity cost, and you have to go deeper, I really think. Like, the sophisticated organizations are really thinking that second or third level below what we've just mentioned. So, you know, measuring the number of incidents in MTTR, sure, you know, table stakes. But if you dig deeper, the cost of the engineering team can be really quite significant into other statistics that many organizations aren't thinking about. How many engineers were actually involved in investigating each incident? And you think about the impact and the disruption, and that can vary. If you're in work hours, okay, maybe I stop work on my sprint. If it's 3 a.m. though, that might mean that I don't come in the next morning. So the impact is not just what happens in the incident, it's what happens afterwards. And then if we think about, okay, the number of engineers involved, but then how many should really were actually contributing to resolving that incident? I might have a much higher number, and this is the trend that I see for sure. And unfortunately, it's not typically very easy to measure this. It's not just how much time was I down, but if you go and take that time and energy and effort, it's going to give you a much better sense of, well, where do I go and invest? Where do I invest in the tools? Where do I invest in the people? Where do I invest in the process to be able to impact this area of developer inefficiency? So imagine that you had an incident that lasted for 1 hour from a customer point of view. That'll typically have you violating a monthly 99.9% uptime SLA, which is already bad, right? It's already affecting the business. But then, you know, along this line of developer efficiency, let's dig a little bit deeper in that. Imagine you had 12 engineers involved in investigating the issue. That's just by the impact of the incident itself, probably going to be 12 hours of disruption there in your team. You might think that's an okay trade-off to solve such a major issue. You know, it's violating my monthly SLA, sure, 12 engineers. But when you dig into the post-mortem, what if 9 of those engineers didn't actually contribute meaningfully to the resolution of the problem? Their services might have been involved or might have been impacted, but they weren't contributing to the issue and they couldn't actually help solve the problem. And that's really common, particularly in a microservices environment. Cloud native has just brought all this additional complexity. And I don't think we're really getting a true understanding of these things because the technology sort of outpaced our sophistication as companies, as groups of people. So, and then, okay, let's dig into the hour of disruption. Maybe that's not the full story. It's an unplanned event. Now you have meetings that might need to be rebooked if it was during the day. You had other teams who are blocked because those engineers weren't able to perform promised tasks. And the context switching from a complex incident is going to take a while. It's not just the incident's over, great, I'm back to full productivity. And that's just if it happens during normal working hours. If it happened late at night, you can probably write off most of the next business day for all 12 of those engineers if this was an after-hours on-call incident. Now, we're talking numbers and those kinds of things, but you can start digging in even further. It's you have sum up all of those hours, but then if you keep doing this, obviously we talked about burnout and people leaving. Better observability can impact a lot of what I described above, but it may not be just a buy a tool type of problem that you can solve. Measuring the right things and then figuring out where those leverage points is going to determine which tools you buy, how you implement them, and where you go and pay that attention to. And the last sort of level I'd go to, and this is where I think really sophisticated organizations truly understand why these things are worth investing in, whether it's changes in people, changes in process, training, et cetera, or you know, significant changes in tooling, you often find that most on-call incidents are actually solved by a very small fraction of your engineering team. They are the ones who have the tribal knowledge or institutional knowledge. They're the ones who are architects. They're the ones that everyone looks up to. And that's the really big risk to the organizations. One, in the moment, their impact and disruption is much higher than other individual engineers. But also, if those people leave, your MPTR is absolutely going to go up. You can't just replace them with more junior engineers because of that tribal knowledge and because of that the reliance that you've got there. So your developer efficiency could become so concentrated on these key people that your innovation is actually disproportionately starved out, because everyone talks about, you know, the 10x engineers, the force multipliers. These are often the people you have to rely on to solve these incidents, and they're being redirected away from your product innovation and competing against your competitors. So it's a lot of doom and gloom. But at least from the perspective of observability and how it affects this developer efficiency problem, I think it's really about delivering on positive outcomes. You know, improving the developer efficiency. Can you have all developers capable of solving a much greater set of problems? Can they do that without having to page other developers? It actually increases their own satisfaction, right? If they're sitting around on incident calls and they can't solve things, it's a huge cause of burnout. If they're individually able to solve something, get it actionable, solve it, reduce MTTR, feel like a hero, that's great. As much as they expect to be on call, being able to solve the on-call problem and reduce that blast radius is going to be important to them. And obviously, you have fewer developers involved in each incident. The great observability means that you can go and manage the costs. You can have the data that you need when you need it. Helps you solve those problems again. So fewer developers involved, less focus or burden on your senior developers or architects, and more actionable data. It's going to allow you to reduce the number of incidents, the time taken to resolve those incidents, and obviously the number of engineers on a per incident basis. And it's a progression. Many organizations I talk to are hoping that we can move to self-healing systems because it means little to no developer involvement in dealing with these really impactful events. But you can't snap your fingers and just solve this by magic. You really have to sort of graduate up through there.
So if you really can free up the developers, they can innovate more, build good software, focus on their core job, and also engage with other parts of the business, leading business experts, data scientists that are building more data-driven applications and so forth. So there's also this opportunity cost to what the developers are doing, what they should be doing. So, okay, so now Chronosphere, you're with a company that's looking to help solve this problem. Tell us more about your strategy and offerings to ease some of this pain.
Yeah, and I think one of the interesting things about Chronosphere is that it's really an organization, a vendor, a company, and a product that's focused on solving organizational pain. Observability is often seen as like, oh, well, we just throw some metric data, some tracing data, and logging data into the one platform. We throw some dashboarding and alerting on it, and we're good, and it'll just scale up. If it's a big company, then you just have more data. So organizational pain, many of the things that we've talked about. So for example, the explosion of data related to adopting cloud-native architectures, you've got auto-scaling containers, you've got microservices, lots of complexity, but a lot more data points, just a lot more data volume. We see developers all the time. They spend a lot of time wrangling the telemetry to try and reduce costs. So developers, we put the developer teams and central observability in control of their telemetry across all the key data types. We allow organizations and individual developers to understand what's valuable in those data sets. Are you generating metrics that you just don't look at and that don't help you solve problems? Okay, well, do you need to keep those things? We put you in the driver's seat. We make it easy for you to make those decisions. And then for the data that's valuable, obviously we keep it and then help you make better use of it. So if you think about it, in peacetime, you're spending a lot less time managing costs. And in wartime, you have the telemetry that actually matters for you. To put that in some hard numbers, we typically see at least a minimum of 60% reduction in things like metric data volume. We allow customers to maintain the value of their tracing data sets or improve them, you know, 5x while reducing the total volume of data they need to store and manage for that. And then capable of more than halving log costs without compromising the functionality, the insight that they're looking for there. So that's a very important piece. And as we said, you know, earlier, the economic situation that's become, you know, pretty top of mind. But just being cheap or just being able to drop data is definitely not enough. But it's a pretty unique value proposition compared to hosting all this stuff yourself, or you know, what most vendors do, which is just charge you continuously as your data volumes grow and grow and grow. We're also supporting things like the huge shift that we see for organizations to own their observability telemetry instrumentation, move away from proprietary agents and interfaces, and take on experiences based on open source standards like Prometheus and OpenTelemetry. But those data types often don't come with great out-of-the-box experiences. You know, oftentimes you have to choose, do I choose my own destiny with open source data and free myself from vendors? Or do I get a good experience that allows, you know, developers to dig in and make progress very quickly and not have to build huge sets of dashboards and handcraft alerts? So when you've got custom instrumentation from lots of different sources and formats, like in large complex organizations, getting a nice out-of-the-box view of your services, figuring out the dependencies immediately, knowing which alerts are impacting you from downstream, that's typically been a pipe dream. So we provide out-of-the-box UI there. It's customizable, but you shove your telemetry in, we figure out what's going to, you know, map to different services and present that to you. So you spend less time fiddling around with that while still supporting that vendor agnosticism. And then for those deeper problems that are going to require more investigation, we're building really deep root cause analysis features that are cloud native, in the sense of they're built from the ground up to understand microservices. They're built from the ground up to understand, you know, the many different layers of infrastructure that underpin these applications as well. But you can pick and choose. So you can think of it like on and off ramps on a highway. You pick where you want to start and where you want to hop off. And that allows us to cater to, as I said before, that broad range of personas inside an engineering organization. You might have, you know, very deep dive complex things you want to jump straight to immediately if you're an architect. But if you're a junior developer who's on call for the first 6 months of your career, you want to be able to be guided through some of those basic things. And then, of course, over time, pick and choose a little bit more of your own adventure. But we do all of this in a way that's not black box magic. You can decompose it, validate it, and customize what's happening. And really, it's about, again, organizational pain of making sure that we're meeting engineers where they are, meeting the organization where they are, and then allowing them to make the best use of the very significant investments you have to make in observability, not just on the tooling side, but also that telemetry. And one of the key ways that you can think about it is that the institutional knowledge or the tribal knowledge of your power users and your architects, you can imprint that into the product so that every engineer can make use of it. And we're able to do this at, you know, real scale. Obviously, scale has sort of lost a little bit of its meaning as from a vendor side, but putting into, you know, tangible logos, Snap, Affirm, DoorDash, Norm Security, Robinhood. We're doing these things organization-wide for those companies.
So at Eckerson Group, we've written and spoken a lot about best practices for data management to support operations, but also primarily to support analytics. So there's this discipline that I think is pretty well established of data ops. If you have a data ops program, you are following best practices for testing of pipelines that ingest, transform, and deliver data, or some variation in that sequence. You have best practices for CI/CD. You mentioned that earlier. Continuous integration, continuous delivery, and then also orchestration of data pipelines. So this is a realm that primarily is applied to analytics. Very interested in hearing about Kronos' view about how these best practices can apply to the pipelines that support observability by delivering the data types of logs, metrics, and traces.
Yeah, It is absolutely very relevant, particularly if you're owning your telemetry, as I talked about before. Do want to iterate, you know, it's not just a tooling thing. There's definitely the people and process, as I mentioned. It has to be a holistic view of things, particularly in larger organizations. But for us, we think this is so important that we actually recently acquired Calyptia, a telemetry pipeline solution from the maintainers of Fluentd and Fluentbit, and importantly, built on top of that open source technology. As I mentioned, you have that ownership and control of telemetry by engineering organizations, and we're starting to see a definite trend of organizations going, okay, well, I'm generating this stuff. Now I need a pipeline to be able to manage it. As you say, in a similar fashion that we've seen around the analytics space. And so our investment in bringing Calyptia into the platform is strongly related to that trend. So as I see it, at a high level, the future is really about putting the right data in the right place or the right platform that matches the use case. So that data can serve a number of different purposes. And interestingly, you know, the types of telemetry that we touch, the observability telemetry, it has value for FinOps use cases, for compliance and security as well. Obviously, there's been an interest in, you know, the convergence of DevSecOps, and then even our own work with the FinOps Foundation, because we want to be able to apply FinOps principles to the management of observability telemetry. But properly managing and routing the data for those use cases, for example, sending data to multiple destinations or accommodating the security processing requirements you might have, like strip out PII or PHA, PCI data, that's very much we see as the domain of telemetry pipelines, because you want to do that as close to the source of data. You don't just want to be stuck in a scenario where, oh, I have to send everything to a SaaS vendor, and then I have to extract it back out. Instead, it makes a lot more sense to have it in this pipeline that's in your environment. So we see the telemetry pipelines as another area where we can extend the concepts that I've talked about, that around data control that Chronosphere has really led the market in. And for telemetry pipelines, logs in particular, it makes a really large amount of sense to take a lot of the transformative actions around processing and refinement, do that as close to the source as possible. Due to the structure of the data, the massive volume, as well as the multiple use cases, observability, compliance, security, it really makes a lot of sense. And, you know, as you mentioned, with the learnings from the industry around data ops best practices that you've written about as well, they can have a huge relevance to how we see observability teams and engineering organizations making use of telemetry pipelines as well. You can't do everything at once, so it's important to focus in, maybe start small, and then rapidly iterate to expand. So it's going to be key if you don't have a telemetry pipeline, and most organizations do not. The telemetry has a value across a range of different use cases, but for those use cases to be well served, you're going to have to engage across the organization and discuss stakeholders, as you pointed out in the best practice guidances that you've written about. So you want to have them guide you through those key choices that you make. Which data should we route through the telemetry pipeline, and where should it go to have the most value and impact? The last parallel that I'll draw between what I know about the point of view that Eckerson has elaborated on in data ops, your observability telemetry absolutely needs governance control. There's so much sensitivity in here. So the pipelines have a key role to play in data validation and cleansing, not just for security purposes, but also data quality, you know, garbage in, garbage out. So also, if they're broadly rolled out, they can become the source of truth for how the telemetry traverses the organization, and you're essentially shipping your org chart in that sense.
Well said. And I'll put an exclamation point on what you said about data quality, the timeliness and the accuracy and the consistency and applicability of that data is critical, because so many organizations are awash in data that might not be quite right. A lot of noise, not enough signals, and which is particularly troubling with observability practices. So final words of wisdom for those who are looking to improve observability processes in 2024 and beyond. I'd love to hear your thoughts. I think that, as I said, we're at an interesting point where so many more organizations are advancing their digital transformations. They're increasingly coming to view cloud-native software as a source of competitive advantage. And so it's more and more strategic to their business. As they get more dependent, they realize that observability matters. What's your parting wisdom and words of advice here?
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I think in some of the conversations it's sort of been with customers, I think a theme has popped up, which I'll sort of share here. It's if you're buying solutions and you haven't defined the problems you're solving, then you're not actually buying solutions. You're just buying tools you're not going to get value out of. It's going to be the equivalent of shelfware. So the way to solve it, in my mind, supporting what I said before, is developing a proper observability strategy is going to be one of the best paths you have to better engineering productivity and developer efficiency. It's going to connect your engineering goals and business outcomes and thread them through the people, process, tools, product changes you're going to need to get there. But it's going to require you to dig. You can't just take high-level KPIs and call it a day. You have to dig and really think about these impacts and then take the work to figure out what the strategy is going to be to connect all of this through.
Okay, Ian, thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate you coming on and getting our community a little smarter on this strategic topic.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, everyone, for listening as well. We hope you took away as much as I did from today's podcast. For further information on what we've talked about, please head over to chronosphere.io. We'll be back next week with another episode in our podcast series. Until then, you can subscribe to this podcast on all major platforms. You can follow the conversation on social at EM360 Tech on Twitter and LinkedIn. You can also get great daily content at em360tech.com.